I really wish that this like space had been titled something like Keynote is not a chain. Because like it's like we're gonna have to say that a lot, and I feel like that's like we talk about unleashing off-chain compute. It's like really important to start that from the premise that like we are not a chain, we're not trying to be a chain. And again, that can be like mildly confusing because we have been sort of chain adjacent or maybe looking to be a chain in the past. And a lot of what we're talking about here is like what you can get to once you're just like, okay, the chain primitive is like very oversupplied. It's like over incentivized. It's going to be produced. It's like, you know, when the aliens abduct Homer Simpson and he like drops his pants for them to probe him, and they say, you know, we've reached the limits of what human probing can teach us. I think like that's the same for like chains. Like there's a lot of them where like, you know, reaching the limits of how much you can incentivize building them. And what we see our work as right now is, you know, now that we've reached the limits of what building L2s can teach us, or there's people who will sort of delve into all those crevices, you know, how we actually use that to make like, because at the end of the
Great
day, in
analogy.
software, you're trying to make things people can do.
Yeah, I haven't done the I haven't done the introduction yet, but that was such a good introduction. I changed the name for you though, Bazil, so hopefully you can see it up there. Keynote is not
That's good. I think we're gonna wanna say this a lot.
okay.
Yeah.
All
Yeah,
right.
we're gonna need to say it a lot.
Okay.
But let's do should we do the intro or the
Yeah,
first questions or
let
get
me do
into
my
it?
spiel. Let me earn my shekels real quick. You have to be careful, by the way, Mozilla. You use the word delve and people will think that you're an AI. I'm now going through all of like
Exactly.
I wrote the word delve into the introduction and then had to go through and like remove the word delve so that nobody would think that I had used AI to write my introduction.
I think there's a meta game there of you know, the AIs are going to learn not to use Delve. So now you should actually signal your
100%.
humanity.
Yeah.
It's
Well,
you got to stay one step ahead. Come
for
on.
the stuff I do use AI for now, there's like I'm having to like I'm saying to the AI, make sure you don't use the word delve. I actually do put that in my prompts a lot now. Don't use the word delve.
Exactly. And so as Doria said,
Yeah.
they'll all quickly learn to like, you know, you're just like RLHFing it
Yeah.
to not use Delve very rapidly.
I don't want to. I don't. This is great banter, but I guess the other additional thing is, do you guys know that the reason that delve is in there so much is because apparently the training data was like Nigerian English, and so
I saw that. I saw references to Nigeria, but I didn't realize that it was
yeah,
like
that's why.
that they like to do it to signal like I guess like
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. Welcome to Keynote Office Hours. Finally, we're joined by Project Bazil and lead developer Doria, and by one of our developers, Marcus, who's here as well. He's been doing work to bring additional blockchain functionality to our fake nodes, which are these spawn locally spawn nodes for dev work. This week, we're focusing on how we're merging on-chain and off-chain computing technologies. So we'll be talking about that off-chain, on-chain hybrid infrastructure approach. Apparently, Keynote is not a chain. Just put that out there at the beginning. We'll be talking about the specific advantages of integrating Solidity, the functionality of Keynote's development environment, and our approach to building this decentralized internet. So my first question, which I will throw, I think, to either Bazil or Doria, whoever feels that they want to answer this the most and the hardest. Could you start by explaining Keynote's hybrid approach, integrating on-chain and off-chain elements, and how it addresses scalability and efficiency challenges in blockchain applications?
I mean, I can take this one since I've been working on our official, you know, white paper and stuff that really covers this thoroughly. So as Bazil said earlier, like there is actually a lot of block space to go around. And if you know, if people here have been following the last couple years of blockchain development, there's been a lot of really good stuff just quite recently, and this has been exemplified by projects like Solana, where there has been, you know, very successful, projects to basically build out, like, you know, a scaled block space that can handle a bunch of transactions per second. And if that's what you're optimizing for, you very quickly reach a limit that the key limiter is actually like basically execution hotspots or execution or transactions that have to be executed serially. This is like, you know, very common sense if you're like in that sort of area of research, and you get hotspots that cannot be optimized because, you know, stuff is happening there. Transactions have to be ordered serially if they're touching the same tokens, stuff like that. So people are moving past that, moving into like how to basically build out execution environments that optimize for that and take that into account. But to me, the really unexplored, interesting field of research, ironically, is what can be done off-chain. Because, you know, when you say like, oh, there's a lot of chain space, it's like, I'm not bearish on crypto, right? Like, I'm not saying that it's not useful. It's rather that the chain space that does exist is not being utilized, very effectively, because there's a lot of it. And because the tooling isn't in place to use it well. So the hybrid approach is to say, look at all the stuff that you...
In addition to...
Yeah.
I was going to say, in addition to sort of Solana and fast execution and you know, the challenges that arise there, I think it's also just worth calling out that there's been a huge increase in, I guess, like sort of secure block space or... asset accessible block space with L2s, where basically you can like safely bridge on really valuable assets that are natively on Ethereum. And that's a big difference because Solana had to like, you know, bootstrap that with like sort of meme coin or NFT activity, but it was cut off from the network effects of all of the sort of assets and whales on ETH. And now that's also, you know, relatively.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, the scaling has gone in every direction on chain. And is continuing to get really, really good to the point where I think if you want to make a meaningful contribution in that arena, you have to differentiate yourself tremendously. The differentiation going on right now is like all around like, you know, earning yield in a proof of stake system or, you know, liquidity games, stuff like that. It's frankly, to me, it's not very inspiring, right? But, that's why we're not doing that. We're going down a different route. Which is this idea of bringing a lot of rich off-chain functionality. So just as a, you know, as a demonstration of this, right? If you are doing an action on chain, the reason you're doing that is to establish global consensus on the data being manipulated and the ordering, right? So interestingly, like if you don't care about ordering, if ordering is irrelevant to the data that you're manipulating, there's zero reason for that data to be on chain. There's zero reason for it. And you're basically using like a jackhammer when you should be using like, you know, a chisel, you know, or a hammer or something, some smaller tool, some tool that has a lot less infrastructural backing. So for example, right, if you're sending a text message to another party, it's really important that you sign that message with your private key and you verify your identity and the receiving party can verify that information and all that. But none of that requires a blockchain. People have been doing that for decades and decades, using computers, right? Using cryptography. And right now you see actually a lot of crypto apps or apps that want to use the global consensus primitive that don't have a place to do things like that. Or are forced to do it in a very like web 2-y way, which creates this impedance mismatch between that and what they do want to do on chain. Or they take the totally wrong turn of trying to do it on chain, which you see like every single cycle this happens. Like people reinvent the idea of like, oh, like let's like post our text messages on chain. Like let's put like stuff on chain that doesn't need to have global consensus done on it. And they do that because if you build a dApp like today, like it actually, like you can kind of see where people get that impulse because there isn't a different place to do it. You have like this browser front end and you have like a chain that you're posting transactions to. And then there's no middle ground of like, okay, well, what if I don't need global consensus on this piece of data? What if I just want to sign it and send it somewhere? So we're building that primitive along with a bunch of other stuff that comes up when you want to build these, you know, rich applications. Sorry, that was long-winded, but that's the summary.
No, that's good. I was going to try to...
Again, we always...
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say we always want to like reground this stuff. So it might be useful to soon talk to Marcus about what he's been doing and how it fits into like what you need to do in order to do like do this stuff and sort of what he can take for granted and is there and what he has to like build.
Okay. Marcus, are you there?
Yes. Can you guys hear me? I assume so. Yeah. This is like, you know, just
a little bit fades.
Like pinpoints this. Oh, let's. Maybe I'll talk louder. Maybe that works better. Doria points out in a good way, like when you're building a sort of when you're pushed into this paradigm of like, okay, I'm in a web browser. My users are going to interact with this through MetaMask. Like where, what am I going to do? You're going to post something on chain, maybe listen to something on chain and that's about it. Or often like interact with a like server somewhere running centralized. Like this sort of like, oh, send a message somewhere else is quite foreign. And notably, like what I've been trying to do and lots of others too is like when you have this sort of personal node, like target, compile target, a lot of the chain interactions can be made easier. Like for example, we have RPCs sort of predefined. You can put them in a config file and sort of like not worry about the classic ethers like, oh, am I going to wait for the wallet to connect or what are the users like going to use for their RPC? Because you assume every user is sort of has their own node. It's hosted somewhere. They might be using a provider. They all aren't running ETH full nodes, but they're doing something. So what I've been doing recently is essentially just making this sort of development environment a bit more rich. Because Rust and Ethereum has a wide range of tools, but in many cases they're sort of separated and like here and there you have something good that people use, but then it fizzles out because the maintainers go away or something similar. But a few of the sort of Rust-based ones, namely like Foundry and a few others that are being worked on, Ethers that's now transitioning into Alloy, they're quite decent in their sort of like how they're building things from the ground up. So now, for example, with all the yapping aside, when you boot a fake node, so to say, on your keynote, you type kit f, the next release will make it so that you actually boot a local sort of chain, on your computer that other keynodes on your local computer or network can talk through. So you have this chain environment that you can talk to, like call contracts, listen to events, everything, but it's all off chain. Well, all off chain as in it's all in your local development environment. So you can stage things and sort of try to emulate this whole full stack thing without pushing it to prod or testnet and sort of, yeah. We've all been developing like blockchain things left and right. And it's, we're hoping to sort of like nail a few of the cases that so often get hit when you develop something like this as a new or old developer, just like headaches, like, oh, yeah. Decoding failures, like classic things that happen to every single person that do these things.
Yeah, and two things on that. I mean, one is we have been banging this drum for quite a long time now. So if you've like, you know, been familiar with any of us, we've been talking about this for a while and it literally just comes down to like, okay, how do you actually implement this stuff effectively? Unsurprisingly, it's like, it is hard. So it's good for us. It's good, you know, good differentiation is when you're solving something hard.
When we talk about, okay, so let's like get down to brass tacks a little bit. So, when we're talking about what the pattern is that people want to do, as you said, there's some nice affordances from being able to run it on, you know, the back end as a server as opposed to otherwise. But, you know, it's, you know, okay.
Well, that's the other thing I wanted to get into.
Sorry, I was going to say, yeah. Like, what do we have, what do we not have, and what needs to be integrated? So what you've been talking about is using Foundry to be able to write, like, you know, easy smart contract plus Keynode development environments for what we call fake nodes, which are basically they're simulating a Keynode network, but not, you know, on it, not on the live network. And for that, you want to be able to, like, sort of simulate a smart contract environment running next to that. So I think, Marcus, it would be really helpful if you talk about what primitives already exist, what kind of wiring up you have to do, and what kind of experience that's able to create.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. So Foundry, which is this broad sort of contract development suite, which everyone perhaps should check out. It's quite a lot easier than a lot of other things. Perhaps people have used Hardhat and things like this. But essentially, when I said, like, what it gives you is this tool called Anvil, which spins up a local chain. It might as well be real. Like, it acts as a, you can hit its RPC. It acts like your Alchemy endpoint or whatever else you do, use as an RPC endpoint to write or read or listen to events, anything you do really with ETH. And you can inspect things. You can console log things within contracts and in scripts, which is quite, like, very useful if you're doing some kind of Solidity development. But what sort of we have and what this affords you is that you spin this up with some pre-registered state. The only pre-registered sort of JSON state we have is just the Keynode contracts. So the KNS contracts with a few pre-registered nodes and the App Store. So you can, like, use these. This is just some initialization. You can run the script yourself, but Kit sort of bundles this up in an ergonomic way. So when you do Kit fake node, it does that in the background. And the other Kit fake nodes you'll boot up will actually register themselves on, like, the KNS contracts, and the other ones will listen to those contracts and actually, you know, do their state, put those nodes into their state. This is like just putting the whole Keynode sort of internal contract, interaction and the off-chain parts of this into, like, reality and fake chain world. But you can do this with your development flow in general too. I hope that's clear enough. Specific questions are appreciated too.
Well, I'd like to explain what that realizes to people, because I don't think it's clear necessarily unless you're in the weeds on it. But mm-hmm. like the current paradigm of building out a ton of chain interaction stuff in TypeScript or JavaScript on the front end is an extremely uncomfortable position to be in as a developer. It's an unpleasant way to build stuff. And people do really want to be able to do that in a backend environment, and it has not been possible at, like, whatsoever. This infrastructure that Marcus has here, combined with actually running Keynode on the real network, means that you actually could build out a front end for your crypto app that does nothing in terms of building out transactions, reading data from chain, nothing of the sort. It can truly be a dumb front end that just renders content and displays it in a nice way. It can hook up to a wallet browser extension, but the actual transaction can be built and put for you to sign on the back end in Rust, which is a much more comfortable way to build these things out. And all the indexing and all the data fetching can be done on that back end. And not only that, to boot, it's a back end that you control, so you can trust it. So I think it's very impactful.
Also, a backend that you can store things in and persist things. So, like, you don't need to do it every time, and you can build up perhaps, like, interesting indexes you might want to know about that others don't. Like, it's something we haven't gotten into this realm a lot, but I think it will be an interesting sort of application. Is that, like, if you want some specific data, for example, like, you have some meme coin, and you want to find every single seller within a time frame. Like, that is a non-trivial query to make to normal indexer. There's a lot of RPC calls, and setting that up in general is not very ergonomic. Usually, like, if you go the least resistance route, you will probably pay someone, like, too much for a subscription for something, and they've indexed all of this. But using, like, the KNS indexer already, or other similar ones, the Auctioneer app as well, you can sort of do this on your backend and perhaps let it run and, like, see the data yourself. It's just sort of, we're trying to make it more ergonomic and realistic to do these things. This also opens up sort of bots in general, where a simple, you know, signing and wallet interaction already can be extended to, oh, actually, you know, like, let's make this simple rule. You can pipe those things through to an LLM perhaps for decisions. Extensibility gets
well more surface. Yeah, I mean, bringing up bots is so good here, because like, this is like another thing that gets reinvented every crypto cycle, which is like order flow getting tossed out into space in just like the most vulnerable ways of like, any way that people have ever done like order flow on chain has like evolved into like a complete nightmare. And like, people are just getting through like the whole MEV gauntlet on certain chains. And of course, they're just starting that gauntlet on less mature chains. But now we have like the whole game of like, oh, well, like use this bot, you know, or use this particular front end to do to manage your order flow for you as a trader. And like, that's even worse, because now it's not even visible on chain when you're getting sandwiched, because you're giving your order flow to some party that's running a Telegram bot, where it's like, you really need to protect that data pipeline. So having your own indexer, and your own provider for your front end is really important there. And it needs to be quite a powerful back end. I mean, we've been digging into like all the things that are necessary there, and thankfully, yeah, the Alloy team has been on this for a while now, and they've put out some really good stuff. But it's code, right? It's a library, so to get that to the user requires this kind of tooling that we're doing.
Yeah. Also, note that like a reasonably promising node now, almost that point, and yes, like Alloy and some of the other libraries we're using are not that like 1.0 yet. Neither are we. So these things evolve like quite quickly. It's exciting being in the weeds. But something to also look out for is like Rust ETH, Wreath, by the same guys, essentially. Guys and girls like building, an entire full node in Rust. And they've implemented quite a few like sort of performance things and cool parts of like snapshotting and so on. And some people are running them on mainnet already, to, you know, like, better results than Go ETH in many cases. But the cool part is they use the same types. So Rust is pretty good at primitive types, and especially in the Ethereum case, they have like specific encodings, in ABI encoding specific parts differ. And usually they're done by like the libraries that usually have done these, for example, in JavaScript, like Doria brought up, usually people haven't liked them that much. I can speak from some personal experience. Some are not that bad, but in general, like the experience of developing on a chain is kind of a pain. Nick perhaps can speak.
Terms of like what this lets people do, just imagine the case of you're trying to do some kind of bot or Telegram interaction, that has, and you're going to run into two big problems, which are both going to like, they're going to make it really hard to like sort of deploy this to users and make it interesting. Which is one, just deploying the bot, especially if it's meant for multiple people to run, gets annoying. And so, you know, having our server solves that, and we'll get into that a lot more probably next week when we show some of the stuff we have there. And then also developing the on-chain interactions of it. Again, you sort of have the tools to do that in Foundry and with Anvil, but actually putting them together with other stuff is really annoying in practice. And having a clear sort of libraries, workflow, everything like that is what you always end up needing for any underlying primitive. So between those two things, if you don't have them solved, you just kind of constantly end up having like not being able to do what you want. But if you have them, you're sort of constantly able to do what you want.
I think you could sum that up as like saying like the way that Foundry uses like Ethereum as the deployment target, you could use Keynote for the dApp deployment target in the same like basically like one command from your home terminal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. I'll just remind everybody if they want to sort of raise your hands and ask a question, you can do that if you want to. Let me see if I've got anything as well. It seems like you guys hit a bunch of the questions that I had already. So, I guess the next thing that I might ask is, Doria, you sort of said that, like, in the white paper, I think you said that Keynote's success is pretty heavily dependent on the diversity and the number of protocols that are operating on the network. So what are, like, sort of your mental metrics for protocol adoption? What future goals do you have?
Yeah, so that's what I'm, like, optimizing for, is, like, can we build out a thing where a number of off-chain protocols can flourish? And of course, those off-chain protocols will often have on-chain components to them, but it's basically because I look at, like, the success of, like, a smart contract blockchain as how many protocols can be running on it, and how much value can they secure? What's, like, how much TVL can they acquire? And also, like, you know, in a less, like, capitalist manner, like, how much interesting novel code can they produce, right? Like, how many new ways of interacting can they generate? And so if you apply that to Keynote, the same logic holds, but rather than just having, like, smart contracts be the vessels for these protocols, you have just sort of general purpose software packages. And these software packages present APIs. They present endpoints that are either public or gated by some sort of, like, membership or status. And they operate in a very similar way. And so something we've talked about a lot in terms in our blogging and just on Twitter and everything is, like, this idea of permissionless deployment, permissionless development. The thing that makes on-chain such a great place to develop is that once a primitive is out there, you can build on it permissionlessly. You can't get rugged in terms of, like, as a developer, what kind of tools you can use, what kind of endpoints you can hit. And that's very much not the case on the web. It's the opposite. You have to build very defensively, and you have to build in a siloed manner. You can't touch the outside world because it could fail on you. And we want to build out a web where that's not the case. And once a protocol is running on a given number of nodes, you can sort of rely on its existence and its stability. So we're doing all sorts of stuff in our tooling, but also in, like, the way the OS works and the way our package manager works in order to enable that.
Do you guys want to talk about what's coming down the pipe then, or pike, as it were? What do we have? What's the alpha for the week? Assuming there's nothing else that you want to talk about on this topic.
I mean, there's the hosting platform, which we covered last week, which is tested now and really
robust.
Yeah,
I mean, we should. Sometimes it's good not to, like, try to do a laundry list of things and instead focus on the main thing. And in that spirit, I would say hosting, like, is ready. It works. We probably will, like, start releasing it to people soon. We'll start adding things that you can do once you have it. Of course, people can write their own, but we understand, like, when you first launch, like, we need to supply those. So we'll start adding those. But at the very least, people can start to feel like what it's like to have that. And a lot of the other things we have coming down the pike are going to rely on hosting being easy to do, so that, like, you know, developers can build a user base easily, and so people can check stuff out easily without having to fully mentally invest.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Meme Deck app on our app store now. That's the Meme Deck team has built out a web interface and now a Keynote app for that same program. So that's pretty cool. And then, yeah, we've got some other apps, in development.
Cool. Anything else on the top? Sorry, go ahead.
In development probably is, like, stuff you'll be able to see in, like, you know, something like 1 week, like some things like that. And we probably should show people we'll probably release some stuff that shows people how to get on hosting, how to use stuff that exists like Meme Deck, and just start kind of getting into that slowly.
Yeah, I actually was able to get Meme Deck as the app on Keynote this week, which was pretty cool, as opposed to the other way of logging in, which is just the, you know, centralized Twitter experience. I actually got it working on Keynote itself. Very easy. You just, you know, just install from one of the mirrors and it's ready to go. So it's pretty cool.
And by the way, I think that's a really interesting new method for stuff to deploy. So one of, like, the sort of metrics here of like, can we get protocols running on this protocol is how can we make it actually easier to launch the Keynote native experience than to launch it as a website? And I think we're getting really close with this work Marcus is doing, because if you're touching a contract, actually testing your contract should be part and parcel with testing the interface and the backend that users actually use to interact with it. And so if we can wrap that all up into one developer environment and make the deployment of the app the same as the deployment of the contract, mm-hmm. I think that actually crosses that bridge and makes it easier to deploy the whole dApp onto Keynote rather than the web. I think that gets us there.
Okay. Any further last comments? Any last questions? Now's your moment. Otherwise, I'm going to wrap it up.
I mean, people can leave at any time, right? But I'd be down to riff on like what we're seeing with like the way crypto as a whole is like ebbing and waning with on-chain activity and where people are deploying apps and stuff like that.
Riff?
We should talk about the current cycle and kind of where it's at and what's like going wrong. It's almost like everyone showed up to the party, but then it's like not really like wasn't quite ready. Like something's definitely like wrong right now. So why don't you give your sort of overall thoughts on that? Like what's happening? Everyone was expecting like, okay, it's starting to ramp up. There's more liquidity. Stuff is going to get going. And for a variety of reasons, it feels very different from DeFi summer. Like in 2020, where maybe the price action wasn't all the way there, but like, you know, you could do stuff and people were getting really excited. And I just think people are not excited right now. And I can go on a whole meme coin spiel for a bit and how stupid it is. But like, I would do, maybe if you want to start with other things so I don't get into a well-worn rut.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, well, it's playing out like in a way does match my biases, which is that basically like the on-chain developer environment. So like, as I was saying at the beginning of the space, right, the on-chain environment is really good for, you know, ordered global consensus on, you know, shared data, but like everything else, it's like not a good place to do it. And there are scaling issues that arise even in a perfect world. So that doesn't matter for DeFi summer. It doesn't matter for DeFi protocols because like if you're doing transactions, like the way I view it is if you're doing transactions, you're paying money to do so. You have to have an expectation of profit. Like I don't mind spending $100 on a gas fee to buy a meme coin if my belief is that it's going to 10x because the gas fee is just, you know, cost of doing business. You know, it's like a tax write-off. I've never done that, but apparently I think it's a tax write-off, gas fees. But that doesn't hold if it's a social app or a video game, right? And there's the class of things where that doesn't hold is much larger than the class of things where it does. And so to your point,
I was going to go in a little bit of a different direction, which is that I feel like this cycle, it actually feels like a lot of the transaction cost infra was in place. Everything was like ready there, even with
good.
And then and it's just like the problem, as you said, you can't write the kind of rich apps you want just using that. It's not a database. And I think like at that point, everyone's just like, there's this huge, I understand why it exists, but like failure of imagination. Like, okay, well, we're kind of out of ideas now. We don't know what to do. And like,
well,
I think that if I was going to say what bugs me about like meme coins, it's actually not their existence. Like I always expect crypto to create the possibility to just do random dumb stuff all the time. That's almost, you know, it would be failing if it weren't, because it would mean it wasn't sort of permissionless and able to do very powerful things with money. But the problem I have with them is when people then try to backwards add a rationale for them, like meme coins are good actually because this, or because like nothing has any meaning anyway, so it's cool. They're just like trying to create it. And I think that's just like, people have just like given up. Like no one in, well, not since like the late 90s has anyone in regular tech been like, everything is stupid, let's just focus on, you know, monetary value. Everyone realized you actually could create lots of real value. And I think meme coins represent this sort of giving up on real value in favor of like much more, you know, zero sum stuff. Like, where can we, if given there's liquidity here, where can we sort of cynically try to get it to flow as opposed to expanding a pie?
I agree, but there's one element of the current market, which is a counterpoint to that, which is like the reaction to sort of VC, like heavily bought protocols. And so like, there is a valid argument for the retail buyer.
But
to avoid that.
No, I'm gonna push back really hard. I agree that there is a reason for the current market to avoid that, but that just makes the point even stronger, which is that is this purely PvP thing of like, you know, are you like, given that you're going to lose your money or that you're going to slosh it around, do you want to slosh it around the VC protocols or meme coins? And in both cases, it's like the VCs and the retail punters have given up on anyone creating anything real and have no imagination for what you could do with that, which is mostly disappointing because it is a very powerful technology. And the whole reason so much money is available for them to float around, you know, to sort of do this stuff is because it's so powerful. And I would argue that sort of everyone's given up and it's basically just sort of, yeah, VCs versus retail versus like, I mean, let's be honest, like meme coins are pitched as that, but very often it's just like the insiders in the meme coin also like ripping off retail. So, but the point is like, right. nowhere in these sentences is anyone trying to like, you know, integrate interesting pieces of technology to make new experiences using powerful things. And they've completely given up on it. And like, right. And even like, and so, I'm even a little bit okay with this downturn because unless you have a downturn or this kind of crisis of faith, the VCs will just keep asking you why you're not like playing those games or launching something that they can do in that way. And it gets very hard to do anything. And then they like basically get chastened. It goes down. No one wants to buy their shitty, like, you know, 10th L2 at like a $10 billion FPV. And you get to like reset a bit, rant over.
Yeah. So, it's funny. So I agree with that. I think, I get really like, I'm very optimistic when a new thing comes out that I think might be like what you're describing, like a new interesting interaction tool that is, you know, crypto native is doing something interesting. Like I jump in whenever like, you know, there's a new social protocol, whenever there's like a new on-chain game, like I want to try it out. I bridge to it. I do some stuff. And it has been disappointing this cycle. I would definitely think, I think this is the real cause for the downturn is like protocols like, not to pick on Base specifically, but like Friend Tech and Friend Pet, like I was optimistic. I was like, oh, these are like pretty cool protocols. They're running in a place where they can get good, like good on-chain dynamics and potentially interesting off-chain dynamics, but they just don't deliver on like that new primitive. And both of those cases, I pick on them in particular because I think they would both really benefit from the rich off-chain environment. In both cases, you have protocols where there are a lot of things that are pushed into transactions, that are, you know, probably not necessary to be transactions. And then when they are, it feels like basically a DeFi protocol masquerading as like a game or a social protocol, which to me is just a recapitulation of like, yeah, last cycle dynamics, bonding curves, et cetera. And then there's just like the clunkiness of it. It's really interesting to me. Like there's a really hard limit that you hit when you don't have a backend on a web app, or when you have a backend, but it's like fundamentally so detached.
It turns out the backends are good.
There's a lot of like sort of base level architectural stuff that is, sorely lacking there. And, I don't know. I think we've already kind of like gotten some interesting proto examples of that, in our system. So, I mean, I look forward to being able to show that more and more.
This is great. We should do this every week where we just like open it up for Doria and Bazil to talk about
I think it has more weight because we like crypto. We try the stuff. Like we're heavily invested in it. And so it's not us like, you know, being, I know we're not like Patio 11 just reflexively shitting on crypto and saying everything's like, you know, a money laundering scheme. It's like we actually see a lot of ways this can work. We have a lot of proofs of concept where it can work. And I'm just like disappointed at the shittiness. It's this weird gap between how good some of the programmers are in the space and what they're able to do at the primitive level and how bad the integrated app level is. from an engineering perspective. And I think that gap is what sort of weirds us out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, every week we should do this thing where it's like, okay, Bazile and Doria, where did crypto touch you, you know?
Well, I mean, we talk about this stuff anyway, so if people, you know, if it's interesting to people, I think we should talk about it in public. And it drives what we're building. Like, it drives what we focus on. We're building, like, for ourselves. Like, if I, frankly, like, I never really wanted to be like a kernel developer type. Like, this isn't what I would like do if I could do anything. Like, I would build the actual apps and games and experiences. And I still want to get to that eventually, but the way to do that is so not there that I'm forced to enter this arena, you know? That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I thought in 2016-17 we were there with Ethereum, and just everyone was just like way too naive about what you could do using the chain as a database, which should have been obvious in hindsight, or I think was becoming it by mid-late 2017. But yeah, I think the other thing is, this is why when we talk about stuff like hosting, and it sounds a little bit infra-y or not interesting, it actually has a real immediate impact, which is that we have these internal proofs of concept that we can see or show in videos or do stuff. And having hosting just working lets us deliver those to people as things we don't have to talk about, as experiences. And so, you know, that starts as of, you know, today or the next few days. And that's like really, really exciting to try to actually like move past this talking phase.
All right, we're on 45 minutes. Are there any questions from the audience? I'd give you again your opportunity to ask a question. Edgar reminds me that there's something coming next week. I'm not going to get too specific about it, but last time that I told everybody to turn on notifications for the Keynote OS account, it worked out really well for them, and people who didn't were filled with sadness. So I'll just leave it there. Next week, something's coming that you might want to, you know, have notifications turned on for. I think Doria is filled with sadness, perhaps. Anything else before we close it out?
Yeah, just watch your notifications before Elite Human Capital snipe everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, turn on notifications. All right, everyone, thank you for joining us. Make sure that you mark your calendars, because we do this every week at the same time, noon Eastern, on our x.com account. Tomorrow there will be a blog about today's topic, so look out for that on keynote.org. Also, please check out the links that are posted below the space. You'll find the developer docs if you write code. Well, whether you write code or not, the developer docs will be there. You'll also find links to our Discord, where the whole team hangs out pretty much all day, every day. You learn about the project. You can ask questions in our support channel. You can just chat with us in our commons area. So, we also have a Telegram now. So people who like hate Discord, there's also a Telegram now. So until next time, thanks for listening. Thank you to our developers for their time, and goodbye to everyone. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
See you.